It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18+. Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome everyone to this episode of Deep Space High, sci-fi TV review podcast, where we talk about the latest and maybe not so greatest from today's sci-fi TV. I'm Jedi Master Steve.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
So Chris, the holidays, well, Christmas and Hanukkah and all that, I think has come and passed. Did you do anything exciting?
I cleaned. That's pretty much it. We got my mother a automated vacuum, like one of those shark vacuums. So after we unwrapped Christmas presents, we pretty much just spent the rest of the day cleaning up the house so the vacuum can do its thing and test it out and get it. So that's pretty much it. We watched some football, got drunk, watched a couple movies, Elf. That's a fun movie to watch when you're drunk, especially on Christmas. It's a Wonderful Life, and then Porky's. So,
oh wow,
yeah, that was fun. Fun Christmas. What about you?
Sounds like it. We didn't do much. We just opened some gifts, ate dinner, watched some TV, and then watched the new Wonder Woman movie.
Oh, how was that?
It was all right.
How does it compare to the first one?
I like the first one better.
You think so? Okay, so sequel's not significantly better?
No.
Okay.
Nah.
I mean, would it have been worth watching in theaters?
I don't know. It's one of those that was like, it just felt really long at 2.5 hours.
Really?
Oh. Yeah. It wasn't like Suicide Squad bad, it was just not good.
It was more like Batman the mediocre versus Superman
stuff. Yeah, the mediocre stuff DC has been putting out.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hopefully the Snyder cut and that route goes a lot better.
Hopefully. And James Gunn's Suicide Squad.
Oh, yeah. So. I don't know. That's a little disappointing. Oh, DC had, it's kind of been on an upward trending direction recently. And Wonder Woman was one of those success stories, so for them not to be as good for a sequel, it's a little disheartening.
Yeah, it is what it is. They can't all be hits. It wasn't bad. There were some good parts to it. There's a mid-credit scene if you haven't seen it yet, so don't turn it off as soon as the credits roll.
Yeah, I have not seen it, so don't spoil anything. I have no idea when I'm going to be able to see it.
Well, it's on HBO Max.
Yeah, well, how much is it for HBO Max? Like, $14.99
a month.
Okay, $15 a month. Maybe we'll check it out.
You can do it! You can do it all night long!
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it!
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it!
I'm gonna go do it!
So, all right, well, what do we got in store for this episode?
This time on Deep Space High, we are going over Star Trek Discovery, episodes 1 through 3 of season 1, just to be clear.
Yes, we're starting to get back into my forte of Star Trek.
Yeah, and just to say right off the bat, I know every time we talk about Star Trek, we talk about this, but I do not like the CBS All Access app.
No, I do not either.
Really need to start considering that when we choose our shows.
Yeah, right.
For me, this time, it was like watching a DVD that you know was a little scuffed up, so it would just skip every now and then. It was like, oh my gosh.
Was that CBS All Access, or was that the feel of watching Discovery?
No, it was CBS All Access.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I mean, we didn't have much of a choice. It was just a random poll. Or it was, we did a poll, so I mean, we, sorry.
Yeah, well, I mean, I should have just freaking recorded it, because it is airing on CBS now, and just watched it through my DVR. It would have been a hell of a lot better than watching it through CBS All Access.
Yeah, and you wouldn't have to pay for it.
Right?
I mean, that's what I never understood. Why would you pay for something to where you're still going to get ads and commercials? I mean, if you go through cable, you can get it on demand. And you would
Well, CBS has a no ad package.
It's more expensive, though.
Yeah, it's like $4 more or $5 more a month.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it really is.
It's probably why they're not doing well. I mean, I know we're supposed to be talking about Discovery, but we kind of haven't yet. But Picard didn't really do well in the ratings, so there's a lot of mixed reviews on. There's a lot of rumors that Star Trek's not going to continue, or at least through CBS, and then there's some that they're already planning a whole new stuff. I know there's some stuff's been confirmed, but then there's been rumors they're going to cancel it. So I mean, it's just they haven't been doing great, and what they've been putting out hasn't been very good. So Star Trek's kind of up in the future right now.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Star Wars before Mandalorian came out.
It's one of those where Star Trek will have stuff. They're just really got to reevaluate how they're putting it out and what they're making. Because now they're just like putting it out because it's a cash cow. And they really need to, you know, stop just throwing shit at the wall and really focus on the quality of the content and really fix the freaking app.
So they're going DC on it. Or Warner Brothers when it comes to DCEU.
I guess.
Just, you know, go for the money, not for the quality of the content. You know, who cares about the fans? Let's just get as much money as we can. You know,
kind of. Hopefully DC changes it. But let's actually talk about the shows.
I mean, that's kind of how it feels when it comes to this show. I mean, even going into Discovery, I mean, that's kind of how it feels. That they were trying to do something new, that they were trying to throw in a little bit of Easter eggs for old school fans, but and trying to throw in some connections. But it seemed like they were trying to do a whole new reboot and bring in a whole new audience. And it just didn't really seem to work out very well, especially for the first season.
Yeah, let's talk about this first. These first three episodes. Episode 1 is entitled The Vulcan Hello. And I mean, it gets off on an interesting chart. I mean, it kind of did feel like a chart.
Yeah.
It's just one of those questionable episodes. You don't know if it's going to be a fart or a shit.
Jeez.
That's funny. But it's one of these episodes where we're introduced. The first scene is actually with Klingons before you're introduced to our main character.
Yeah.
That's an interesting route end. But you know, the main character and her captain, I don't remember the first scene with the Klingons too much. But
they were just
the first scene.
That was one of the things that kind of bothered me, was that they had all the Klingons just speaking Klingonese the entire time. You had to read like the first pretty much half of the episode.
Yeah, you're not much of a subtitle person.
No, not really.
You don't read fast enough. You're not at the high enough level.
Not when I'm stoned.
No, but it was one of those. I mean, we're introduced to Michael Burnham and Giorgio, Captain Giorgio. They're on this planet trying to make sure that this planet has water so this species can survive without violating the Prime Directive. And then they're kind of thrust into this situation where one of their deep space relays are out of commission.
Well, they were damaged by something.
Yeah, they don't know if it was just a meteor or if it was an intentional damage to, because of Starfleet protocol, a ship has to go and physically inspect the damage. Mm-hmm. So they're thrust out there into this very young binary system that is in the middle of producing all these gases and will eventually turn into a solar system. And then that's when they find the object, and Brenham goes and investigates. Turns out it's Klingon. She ends up killing one of the Klingons on accident, starting this whole situation. But chances are, even if she didn't kill it, they still would be in the situation. She gets back to her ship, and they're on the verge of war. Or so it seems. They're at a standoff. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but the rest of the ship's oblivious because she was kind of, you know, after she killed the Klingon, she was set adrift, and I guess the radiation from the binary star system causes your DNA to unravel like noodles, according, you know, I guess
that's how they explained it.
Yeah. So she was kind of in the decon chamber. I guess they're fixing their DNA. So they were oblivious for multiple hours.
Well, not only that, her spacesuit was recording the situation the whole time, and then the data ended up being corrupted. So they were, you know, still just as blind as they were before Brenham goes out and investigates.
Mm-hmm. So they have to go just based purely off of her word that it's the Klingons.
Yeah, and what ends up happening is on the Klingon side, you're finding out that someone named Kuvma is trying to start continue a movement to unite the Klingon houses together, and they turn on this really bright light, which is described as a new star appearing in their quadrant, according to Sarek, which at the end of the episode leads to somebody causing some trouble. What happens is the episode ends with Klingon ships dropping out of warp. And did Brenham... Yes, she did. She did commit the mutiny at the end of the first episode.
Yeah, because she Vulcan neck-pinched the captain, Giorgio.
Giorgio, yeah.
Yeah, so she pinched
Philippa
her...
Giorgio.
Vulcan neck-pinched her captain, knocked her out, and tried to destroy the ship before she woke up and arrested her for mutiny.
Yeah, and then a bunch of Klingons drop out of warp, and that's how the episode ends.
Mm-hmm.
But the first two episodes are really, it's really one big episode, because I remember when CBS aired, they dropped the first two episodes on the same day.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a two-parter that explains the whole, I guess, the foundation for the season. Or I guess the series, really.
No, nah, mostly the season.
Yeah. I don't know. It was a weird episode. I will say that hats off to CBS. You know, back when Next Generation and Deep Space Nine and all of them came out, they always had groundbreaking graphics for the time. And their they kept up with that with Discovery. I mean, the CGI on that binary star system was phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, it was great. Movie quality.
They did. They put
coming
a lot
out of a TV
of,
show.
Mm-hmm. So you got to give them credit where credit's due on that one. But yeah. Some of the story just doesn't make any sense. And there was a lot of inconsistency with prior lore prior Star Trek timeline, a lot of contradictions. And it was, I don't know, it was an entertaining episode. And if it was for someone who had never seen Star Trek before, it might be an interesting. What do you think about?
Given that I'm the casual fan, it is the more intriguing episode. I mean, it's a very intriguing episode. I mean, I've seen a lot of other series and a lot of other episodes from those series. So I know the only thing that threw me were the Klingons. They did look a little different, and they even sounded a little different. I meant to go back and kind of look at when Klingons speak in other series and just kind of listen to how they sound.
Yeah, there's different dialects within
of course.
Klingonese. I think there's oh man, 20 something different dialects at least. So they sound a little bit different. I'm more confused about the way that they look. I mean, why they look so different. I get the upgrade in makeup, and you want better quality, but
probably just want to show off.
Probably, but I mean, at least keep it semi-consistent with, you know, the way it was before. Kind of like with the Vulcans, how they didn't really change much for the Vulcans.
Well, the Vulcans, hey, let's put some pointy ears on and let's shoot those eyebrows up.
Hey, but that's all pretty much the Klingons were in the original series was just, well, blackface almost. I mean, it's kind of bad to say, but they painted their faces a darker color and that was pretty much it. And then they gave them little beards. So they didn't really have much.
One of the original Klingons was Christopher Lloyd, who plays Doc Brown in Back to the Future. I thought it was, at least.
Oh, well, that was in the movies.
Yeah, in the movie.
But in the TV show, they were just, they looked like humans who painted their face brown and grew little goatees. You know, it wasn't no different than a Vulcan. So
yeah,
it wasn't until the movies when they changed it up a bit.
You know, yeah, so the movies changed it up from the original series, and then, you know, I'm sure Next Generation changed it up a little bit from there.
Yeah, I think you brought this up, not on the show, but earlier when we were talking about it, that you noticed that they had two noses for the first time.
That was four nostrils, not really two noses.
Yeah.
One nose, four nostril.
Yeah, that was that's something different that they added to it.
See, I told you that was, I told you.
Now, I figured if they were going to explain away the difference in the way the Klingons look, they would go the augment route from Star Trek Enterprise. Because how in the Star Trek timeline they explained why the Klingons looked human, because they went back to that episode in Deep Space Nine with Worf. They went back in time to episode of the original series. So how they explained it was, they tried to take Khan's DNA, or the people, augments, who were the same species under Khan Noonien Soong from the second movie, and they tried to use that DNA to create their own form of Klingon augments, which made them look human because of the human DNA. So that's how they explained it away in the Star Trek timeline. Now, if they were to go that route and explain it, that would make some sense, but it really doesn't even look close to human, and it doesn't really look close to what they were trying to do. So I got to think they were just trying to do something completely new. You know what I mean? Good. To show off. I know it's a
could have been
long way to go for a short point, but
yeah,
I mean, it just, there's no real logic to it, and it's Star Trek. You got to go with the logic. Come on, guys.
Yeah,
let's. It is illogical.
Let me run down, since it's more of a two-parter, let's run down the second episode real quick, and then we can kind of talk about both episodes as a whole.
Okay.
So, episode 2 starts with a little flashback of when Brenham is brought on to the Shenzo and introduced into Starfleet. And I guess she works her way up to second lieutenant, second officer, first officer, whatever. Don't think we got much information other than that. Other than, you know, she was a part of the Science Vulcan, or the Vulcan Science Academy, kind of a protege under Sarek.
Well, I mean, yeah. Sarek's kind of important to note because this is new in the Star Trek timeline as well. Before this show, Sarek never had another air quote daughter, which apparently he adopted.
Yeah, adopted. I think she said fostered. Because she describes Amanda as a foster mother.
Well, not the Vulcan Science Academy, but at the school. I guess it was a science academy. No, the school.
No, that it was a learning center that was attacked by the Klingons.
Right, that she was growing up in. It brought up that attack, and she freaked out, and you kind of saw flashbacks to her, you know, the attack, and you kind of, or. Was that the one where you saw the flashbacks with Sarek, or is that later in the episode where you see more flashbacks with Sarek rescuing her as a kid?
I think it's a little later in the episode. It's not at the start.
Okay. But that's important to note I guess it doesn't really matter since we're kind of going into it and we'll get into it eventually. But Sarek is one of the people who rescued her from that attack, and that's why she has that freak out in the learning facility.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's an important note for her character arc.
Yeah. And so after the flashback, we learn that 24 Klingon ships dropped out of warp to represent the heads of the 24 Klingon houses that kind of make up the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, you know, brought there to unify under one Klingon Empire. And Captain Georgiou is trying to hail them and kind of trying to open up some negotiations and kind of buy herself time just in case they attack for the Federation fleet that is en route. And, you know, 2 hours away.
You know, it's funny. I've been watching so much Clone Wars and the prequels recently. When you said Federation, my first thought went to the Trade Federation, not Starfleet.
Nope. Yeah.
The
Starfleet fleet.
Yes.
That'd be interesting. Interesting use of words.
Yeah,
yeah, but Georgiou tries to stall, and then that's kind of when the fleet arrives and Georgiou is transmitting a message. That's kind of when the Klingons let all hell break loose and start attacking.
Yeah. Which, oh my gosh. And again, with that
battle.
Yeah. And again, with that CGI, they did not hold back when it comes to the graphics. No.
They wanted to make a good first impression with these first two episodes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and it was, damn. I mean, that was, who was it? I think one of the helmsmen, his console blew up. He got like a concussion, was told to go to the medical bay. But
ends
he ends up
in the brig.
Yeah, ends up wandering in the brig where he runs into the mutineer, Michael Birmingham, who was... Birmingham. Sorry.
What the fuck was that?
Brenham,
whatever.
And it's obvious he's got a concussion because he has no idea where the hell he's at.
Birmingham.
Sorry. I was going to say Burning Man, but I knew it was wrong. I was just trying to get close enough.
That was not close enough. That was not close enough, but okay.
I don't know why I was thinking of Burning Man, but okay.
Because you lit up before the show?
Probably. Oh, man. Well, I mean, we had tacos and Trek I ate some tacos for dinner to honor tacos and Trek for today.
Tacos and Trek, it's back, baby.
Mm-hmm. Not really related, but just wanted to put that out there. Oh, my God. Damn it. Now you got me to tangent off, and now I lost my train of thought. What were we talking
about? Anyways. Well, during the firefight, like you were saying, one of the helmsmen walks into the brig, and then they take I don't know if it's a torpedo or a phaser or a blast that kind of destroys the hull.
I think it was a disruptor blast, but yeah, it destroys the hull, blows him out into space. I mean, it was an incredible scene.
Yeah, makes Burnham sell a fraction of the size it originally is.
Mm-hmm. Well, she should be lucky she was in that cell, because the force field around it is what kept her alive or from being mm-hmm. blown into space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but I mean, it's incredible the way that they weren't afraid to hold back in some of the violence and some of the gore with the show.
No, and I'll talk about that more about episode 3 of how the gore just kind of was out there. But for the most part, the firefight was visually, it was great. Went on for a good portion of the episode, obviously. And when the Admiral finally arrives and hails the Klingon fleet, a ceasefire occurs. And then a Klingon vessel was cloaked. I mean, a massive Klingon vessel, like Death Star size, huge. And runs into the Admiral's ship and pretty much obliterates it.
Yeah. I don't know if it was Death Star size. What's that? What was Vader's cruiser? That Imperial Star Destroyer or whatever?
Super Star Destroyer?
Yeah, more like that. Pretty fucking big, though. I mean, yeah, it rammed right into the ship. And you got to honor the Admiral. He had no hope of destroying it, so he went full self-destruct.
They pretty much blew the core of
they blew up the warp drive
to try to disable that ship.
Oh, they annihilated that ship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so this here, I kind of want to give a brief explanation. For those of you who don't know, a warp core is made up of an matter-antimatter containment chamber. And when you combine matter and antimatter, they completely cancel each other out in a massive convergence of energy because they're two complete opposites. It's not a great explanation, but I think it's a 100% convergence of matter to energy when you combine matter to antimatter, where TNT is like a micro fraction of the energy conversion. So to give you an explanation, when you combine the two, it creates a huge fucking explosion.
Mm-hmm.
That was just the point of the story. So it's a very useful tool, but it's extremely dangerous, even in just the tiniest quantities.
Yeah.
And it's also the most valuable item on Earth. So a single gram is worth trillions of dollars.
Yeah, if you could ever find it.
Well, I mean, you can't really find it. You have to create it. Because, yeah, I mean, it explodes on contact with matter. So you have to create electromagnetic fields to hold it in stasis. And that's what the containment chambers are. And that's what containment chambers are when they refer to that in Star Trek. Oh, the containment chamber's failing. That's the electromagnetic containment chamber holding the antimatter in stasis so it doesn't come into contact with anything and blow it up. We actually have those in real life when we create antimatter. So just a bit of background in case you didn't know it. Sorry, Steve, would you like to continue?
To talk about what happens throughout the rest of this episode, the ceasefire occurs, Captain's ship blows up, Klingons warp out, the Shenzo's kind of dead in the water. No impulse, no warp, can't do squat. So one of the flagship that kind of lit the torch stays behind and starts picking up some of the dead Klingons. And Saru, the second officer, his idea was, hey, we may not be able to fire our torpedoes or do anything, but we can still take the warheads from the torpedoes, put them on the dead Klingons as they're beaming them back onto the ship, and then blow them up from the inside, causing damage. It's like, Saru, someone who's a character who's kind of cowardice.
I mean, I don't... Well, yeah, clever. I mean, he really... I guess cowardice is an apt description that he even describes himself as. I guess the way that he described it, I don't know if it was this episode, it might be the next one, but his species was literally bred, like farmed, like how we have cows. It evolved from that, and they evolved to sense danger, because when they sense danger, apparently it releases a chemical in the bloodstream, and when they kill them for slaughter, they want to regenerate as much fear as possible because it creates better tasting meat. So his species was literally bred, farmed to be killed for meat. So he has like these ability, like I guess tentacles that pop out of the back of his head, which senses fear and, you know, when death is imminent. So I guess he was.
Yeah, I think it was the first episode.
It might have been. But
they played it up for dramatic effect. But yeah, I mean, that's, still, he has a pretty devious idea.
That is crazy.
Even the captain's like, man, that's pretty messed up, but I like it.
Yeah. But I mean, that is crazy, though, when you think about it. Could you imagine an entire intelligent species being evolved and bred to be slaughtered and eaten? Like, yeah, that? Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting one. I'll give you that. It's creative.
Yeah. And this episode gets more interesting when Captain and then Brenham has to break out of her cell in order to survive. Her and the captain end up transporting. They get this bright idea that they could transport to the Klingon ship since the shields are down. Capture T'Kuvma, who is the leader of this whole movement in trying to unite the 24 houses. Mm-hmm. And then if he was captured and considered a prisoner of war, it would essentially bring dishonor to him and ruin his reputation, because we obviously know Klingons value an honorable death and death in battle. So they tried to do that. That failed. He ends up killing Captain Georgiou, which in turn, Brenham switches her phaser from stun to kill and kills him.
Right.
And then Brenham gets sentenced to life in Gitmo, or Starfleet's equivalent, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Guantanamo Bay, you get that?
Yeah, I get it. I'm just trying to think where it would be.
I
don't think they, I don't know if they have necessarily an equivalent to Guam, but I don't know. It was, they went to a military prison. I don't know. This is, I guess, what kind of confuses me then. What's the time jump from episode 2 to episode 3?
6 months. You don't pay attention at all.
Well, no, it's not that. If it's a 6 months difference and they're transporting her again, where are they transporting you to? You know, why did it take 6 months to transport him?
We'll get that when we talk about, no, we'll get there when we talk about season three or episode
three. Episode three. All right. Well, then I guess we'll wait and get there then.
Yeah, you're jumping ahead.
Wow.
So this was one of the things, because they were heavily in these two episodes. It was very clear that Starfleet hasn't dealt with the Klingons in 100 years. Now, how much time is between Enterprise and, because I know this Discovery takes place, I think it was 5 years before the original series. What's the time difference between Enterprise, where I know they dealt with some Klingons, and this show?
Well,
is it more than 100 years? Yeah, it's got to be.
It's going to be around 100. Well, it's going to be about 100 years, because I think it was 2241 when the NX-01 started its first mission with the Klingons. But they were heavily involved with the Klingons in Enterprise. Like, there was no relationship problem. Well, I mean, there was tensions and feuds, but they had casual relations, or at least more normalized relations than, you know, that's one of the things that confused me, because the Romulans were the ones that have always been hidden and mysterious.
And hidden, yeah.
Yeah, they would go away for long periods of time because, you know, even in Enterprise, they were shadowy, mysterious figure that they never saw their face. They had cloaking technology in Enterprise, and they saw that in Enterprise. So that was one of the things that kind of confused me when they saw cloaking technology for the Klingons for the first time. It's like, what are you talking about? It's been around for 100 years.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. If they went the Romulan route, that would make more sense, but it could be. As far as I know, there was no wars, there was no real conflicts between them, but they did eventually go to war, because I know the original series talked about how it did lead to war. So this could be the explanation of that war, but the way that they're setting up the Klingons makes no sense. First of all, the Klingons don't really care about their dead. Now, they care about the afterlife, and they care about the Klingon going to Stovokor, and that's what the Klingon death chant or the death ritual was. You know,
they're equivalent to Valhalla.
Valhalla?
Yeah.
What's Valhalla?
Where, you know, Viking warriors wanted to go when they died. I don't know. I've been playing Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
Oh. I don't know. I've never played it, so I don't know.
That's got it, so.
Oh, okay. But yeah, I mean, kind of, yeah, essentially. It's where honorable warriors go to die. Is Stovokor. And when a Klingon dies, what they're supposed to do is they look into their eyes and then they holler in the air. And that's what that loud scream was when that one Klingon died. And it's a warning that a Klingon warrior is on his way to Stovokor.
Yeah.
But when the chant was done, they didn't give a shit what happened on the body. You know, it was just a hollow. They even said it was just a hollow shell. Do with it what you please. So the fact that they have all this extensive ritual. Yeah, I remember
that
ritual,
from, what was that, Next Generation?
Yeah. I mean, and it was the same through Deep Space Nine. They really didn't care. It was just the honor and if they got into Stovall Corps. So if they didn't die through honorable means, there was ways to honor them in great battles and their name to help get them into Stovall Corps. And, you know, there was, but they really didn't care about the actual body. So the fact that they treated it so differently was weird. There was just lots of inconsistencies in the storyline or the telling of it. You know what I mean? It just didn't feel like it wasn't, there was no Jon Favreau equivalent of Star Trek nerd running or writing the script. you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those, because one of the ships they described, and I'm thinking it's the Torch or the Beacon ship. It had hundreds or thousands of caskets on there, and they're, you know, they were, Saru said something about them being in various states of decay from as recently as a couple hours to as old as 1,000 years. So I found that a little odd, but maybe there's just this one little faction that, you know, believes more or something different than the traditional Klingon. So they save their body and use it as some ceremonial hole on their ship.
Well, what I thought it might be was it would make sense if they did like the leader of the High Council or whoever is emperor, if that was kind of their special resting place for their most honorable of warriors, you know, like potentially this Takuvma, you know, who unites the 24 houses under one banner under Kaelas and, you know, fights a insurmountable foe in the Federation. And potentially, you know, he dies, but he was a great leader, so they preserve his body in an honorable fashion with other great leaders throughout history. That would make sense to me.
I don't know.
But I don't think they went that route. I think it was just flashy, and they thought it would be cool, and they wanted it to look really, you know, decked out and alien. I mean, hell, Klingons didn't even have warp technology or space technology for 1,000 years. Kaelas lived 1,000 years ago. And Kaelas, they didn't have warp or space technology then, under Kaelas.
I don't know.
So I mean, it's because Kaelas is like the Klingon equivalent to Jesus Christ, or Muhammad for Islam, or Buddha for Buddhism. So I mean, he was an ancient integral figure who set the foundation for Klingon society for millennia to come, essentially.
Yeah, I remember him from the Next Generation episodes.
Yeah, you don't really see him again in Deep Space Nine. That's the only time you really ever see him. You hear about him, but you don't really see him.
Yeah.
All right, well, do you want to go move on to episode 3?
Yeah, we could talk about 3, because that's probably, it felt like the more interesting and really where we were getting.
Yeah. Well, do you have any more questions on the Klingons or anything?
Nope, they look goofy. They have no hair. They sound weird. So it is what it is.
Okay. All right. Well, that's pretty much it. Yeah, that wraps it up. So let's go to 3.
Yeah. So episode 3 starts out 6 months after episode 2.
Okay. So why is she on another transport then?
Well, that gets explained in the later in the episode.
Oh, does it? No, I guess I missed that part.
Probably because you got high.
Yeah. Or as Dad likes to say, he was stoned and he missed it.
Yeah. So, you know, Brenham's on a transport ship. They run into this species that starts feeding on the electrical systems of the transport ship. Discovery. The USS Discovery miraculously comes out of nowhere to save the prisoner transport ship, where, you know, we find out that, you know, Brenham's going to have to be staying on the Discovery for a little while with her former subordinate, Saru, and some of her other crewmates, the redheaded, I don't know if it was helmsman or if it was comms. I don't know what the girl's position was on the Shenzo.
I don't know. Every Ship,
I forgot what her name was.
I did too. But then again, that's not surprising for me. For you, that's almost like blasphemy.
I know. That's unusual.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Every ship, like bridge design's a little bit different, so it's kind of hard to tell. Like the Voyager, they had the helmet like in the very back corner. So, or ops position. So, I mean, it's just...
So, who knows? So, anyways, Brenham is now on the ship while they try to deal with the bugs that are eating up the electrical system of the prisoner transport ship. And Lorca suggestively requests that she help him out on some engineering problems and other science problems that they're working on, because this ship is, and I'm throwing up air quotes, a science vessel. And so she gets quartered.
I mean, it's technically is. So
yeah, I mean, she gets quartered with this cadet Tilly, who's, I think now, I didn't realize this the first time we watched this show, but I think she's considered autistic. I don't know. She refers to herself as having special needs.
Oh, no.
She's, I mean, she does. She
says she has a special allergy to certain fibers in their bedding, so she has to get a specially made one that makes her snore. The fibering makes her, like, gives her, like, chronic snoring, so she's like, okay, fine. And that's why she had to switch the bed.
Well, yeah, I get that, but I think there's more to it than this. I'm going to pay attention to her a little more throughout this season, but I think she's considered a little bit more on the spectrum, because there's more to it. Like, they, you know, she's kind of socially awkward around Brenham, but then again, she finds out who Brenham is and that she's the first mutineer in Starfleet history. But I think there's more to it than just having, like, special allergies. And I'll have to watch out for her.
It could be. She does seem a little bit odd, so I mean, it would make sense, but
yeah, I think there's a little more to it than just allergies, but we'll get there. Brenham is assigned to engineering duties, where she has to report to a Lieutenant Stemmons, who's kind of an asshole, but understandably, he doesn't want this prisoner mutineer, you know, someone who's kind of been ran out of Starfleet because of her crimes, interfering with his top secret or above top secret.
I don't know
project
if it,
that he's working on.
Well, I don't know if it's just, I think his asshole mish comes from arrogance, you know, believing he is so much more intelligent and superior than those around
him. It comes
him.
From that, but
I mean, he just, he considers her just a Vulcan number cruncher, you know, somebody who, I'm not going to go that route, but somebody who basically is just really good at reading off stats and figures and quoting or dictionary definition terms. I mean, when she was trying to break down his analysis of one of his words that she didn't know, he was like, are you really trying to sound smart? You know, like,
well, I mean, yes, it does come from arrogance. I agree with you there. He's very cocky and very smart and he knows it kind of person, but it's also, you know, he's being forced to work with this girl who's considered a mutineer and prisoner and really has no business being in his projects. And he's already sour with the war and everything that's going on. He explains it as him and his research partner on the USS Glenn were working on this project. And then they got split up thinking that their progress would double when it's kind of hindered it a little bit. And so he's sour. He has a lot of pent up feelings and is pretty sour with Starfleet.
Yeah.
And I Lorca.
Especially since there's nothing he can really do about it. That's also something he said. What was the name of the captain again?
Lorca.
Yeah. So, I mean, Captain Lorca, when he says something, you do it. You don't really have much of a choice. And that's what he said when she told him that she did not want to be here. She didn't want to help him. She was being made to. Like, oh, well, comes Lorca. Doesn't matter. You don't really have a choice.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You get a brief conversation with the guy who is his research partner on the USS Glenn. And, you know, he's telling Stemmons that, hey, they're making some good progress. They're about to do a test and really push the limits. And Stemmons is hesitant. He's like, very cautious about this. It just doesn't seem like it would work. And then we come to find out it doesn't work because they do their experiment and the USS Glenn goes through a catastrophe, losing all hands. And
did you notice that the communication when they alerted the captain was above top secret clearance?
Yes.
And that was the, okay. Just curious if you noticed that.
Yeah, I mentioned that because that's when I said Stemmons doesn't want Brenham, a prisoner, working on his above top secret clearance project.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, just make sure.
It's interesting how the show churns to almost like a Doom horror video game episode when the away team consisting of Tilly, Stemmons, Brenham, and two other people have to go to the USS Glenn and retrieve whatever equipment and data for this above top secret project. And it's just weird how the episode turns for a few minutes. Because like seeing their bodies, they're almost like pretzels and their faces are
like melted off. And, oh my gosh. And
as you mentioned earlier about how graphic CBS is willing to get with this show, and it was just like,
oh, yeah.
I felt like I was playing Doom.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Or watching the movie Doom with The Rock. That's how that, 15 minute stretch of the episode felt. And it was very odd, but interesting at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little different for Star Trek. They usually don't show the gory stuff too much, or they at least keep it a bit more PG.
PG-13.
Mm-hmm.
This was like PG-17, which I guess would be R, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't
bad, but it was odd.
It was interesting. I mean, I don't mind it, really. I'm just curious.
I don't mind it. It's just not something you see with Star Trek.
Yeah, usually Star Trek's supposed to be more family entertainment, but like I said, they're trying to take it in a new direction.
Yeah, reaching for very mature audiences.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they're kind of banking that the few Star Trek audience or the audience that they're going to get is going to be a little bit older,
Yeah.
Try and appeal to at least the older Star Trek fans who were committed. Try and make it a little bit more mature. Where Star Wars does still kind of feel like a kid show or kids. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
But this episode ends very interestingly because Brenham is convinced that the USS Discovery is working on a bioweapon to defeat the Klingons. And Lorca's like, you must love being right and really hate when you're being or when you're wrong. And then he explains as they transport to engineering that they're not working on a bioweapon. They're working on a biopropulsion system, I think is how he described it.
Essentially.
And then, brought up a bunch of pseudoscience mumbo jumbo that made absolutely no sense and kind of, I think, would hurt some real scientists. But maybe I'm wrong on something. Who knows?
Hey, you never know. Warp theory was created from Star Trek. Fun fact for you.
Yeah, there's something that's pseudoscience and plausible and then pseudoscience and, way out of left field.
Well,
this was like pseudoscience
way out of left
field.
Was
like the parking lot of left field.
Hey, they said the same thing about warp drive because warp the official warp theory did not come out until 1995 when I think a Brazilian, I think it was
Mexican.
Brazilian. Was he Mexican? Scientist.
I think it's a Mexican physicist.
Yes, when he first proposed the theory, and Star Trek described it back in 1966. So what is science fiction today might be science reality tomorrow. And the way that I explained it, I mean, it wasn't totally I kind of understood the logic. The idea is that at the quantum level, there is no differential between biology and physics. It's, the same property. It still falls under the same properties. And because spores are spread throughout the galaxy, they're theorizing that these spores are similar to like a dark matter or dark, almost like a dark circulatory system that's kind of holding the galaxy together or the universe together. And because it's everywhere, you can instantaneously transport along these biomatter using the spores. So you can I mean, it's
he was saying the Glenn was able to travel, what was it, 90 light years in the matter of 1 point something seconds.
Yeah.
When the Discovery is only to the point where they can do a couple hundred kilometers. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's theoretic. Yeah. And then theoretically, you could transport. It's got unlimited range for using the system. So you can instantaneously transport across the galaxy, theoretically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you could understand why this would be above top secret clearance.
Yeah. I mean, it would change. You would be able to pop in, attack Kronos, the Klingon homeworld, and pop out in the matter of minutes with no one seeing you coming.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So you really could.
It's a game changer in the world of fake science that I'm going to keep calling it until.
Hey, a lot of technology, or I should say Star Trek predicted a lot of technology that we have used today.
Yeah. Yeah, let's see if we can get this other theoretical physicist and some sort of biologist who, the guy who came up with warp theory, or at least, you know, showed that warp theory was plausible, which, yeah, I was right. It's a Mexican physicist.
Was it?
Yeah, Miguel Alcubierre. I don't know. I'm bad at pronouncing names, so sorry. And I'm really bad when they're not from my culture.
I mean, we are Mexican.
Yeah, half, but doesn't mean I'm good at pronouncing Spanish words and Spanish names. I mean, I did fail Spanish once, so.
Hey, at least I never failed Spanish. You know, I got a C in it twice. Yeah, I took it.
Oh, I didn't think you took it. Yeah, anyways, so there's some things from this episode that stuck out. And one of them that I wanted to bring up was this. I can't even get it out right now. But breath authorization.
Yeah, that was
to enter rooms.
That was like a weird one.
It was like, really, you want me to breathe into this and you'll grant me access? Okay.
Well,
that's cool.
How do you analyze your breath? Is it?
I'm sure there's easier DNA on the.
But there's easier ways to do that.
There is?
Yeah, and I'm sure there is.
I'm thinking, do they have to set like a drunk limit? So if you're coming from the mess and you got like this great idea, but you're at like a 1.5 blood alcohol level, will they know that?
Like a breathalyzer.
is it like a breathalyzer entrance?
It's like, my gosh.
If you just smoke some dope, will it know that? And be like, nope, access denied because you've been smoking some dope. Try again in 12 hours.
Oh my gosh.
And then she as Brenham breaks into one of the rooms by essentially letting Tilly drool on a towel and then using a little puffer to puff it into the thing. I was like, yeah, that's a very secure system. Whereas, you know, a retinal scan, she would have had to like pull her eye out.
Yeah, right.
It's like, okay, what is happening here?
I know. And it's they're trying to make it seem like, oh my gosh, you're so smart for figuring out how to break through. It's like the dumbest security system I've ever seen.
It's like Brenham gets around it in like 1.5 seconds. Uh-huh. It's not hard at all. I mean, unless they have a drinking problem on the science ship to prevent scientists from working and drinking. I mean, other than that, I don't understand why they can't have retinal scans or thumbprints.
I don't know. That's funny.
I don't know, but I'm trying not to laugh. It's making me cough. It's like, it was ridiculous. I'm crying a little bit that I'm laughing.
It wasn't that funny.
No, it's I'm just sitting here drinking, like thinking of a Starfleet officer. Okay, blow into this little access panel. Let's see how drunk you are. Oh, you can't access your own lab. You're shit out of luck.
Oh my gosh.
You're confined to quarters. It's like, see, I'm just the scenarios playing in my head are hilarious with this.
Oh, I can imagine. I'm thinking of, Lower Decks, where one of those Lower Deck junior officers gets drunk, is like, fuck you, breathalyzer, and just pisses inside the breathalyzer instead. Like, I do what I want. Well, oh my gosh. That'd be funny as hell.
Yeah. But, okay, so we can move on to a serious topic now that I've got my breathalyzer scanner conversation out of the way. But in this episode, we do hear, I mean, the Discovery is a brand new ship. We heard the prisoners talking about it, that it looked like it was fresh off the line. And they were kind of like, why the hell isn't this ship on the front lines, given that it's brand spanking new? Another thing that came that you really notice is just how intelligent Brenham is. I mean, we know she went to the Vulcan Science Academy. We know she grew up on Vulcan, so she grew up not really suppressing her emotions, but trying not to let them dictate her actions like a Vulcan. And she's really intelligent. Stemmons gives her a line of data, and she was like, okay, this all made sense until physics started to mesh with biology and was questioning Stemmons about it. So you know she's sharp, and you kind of hear that from Saru when Lorca asks him to give his impression on her, that, you know, Saru sees her as the smartest officer in Starfleet before she did what she did.
Oh, yeah, and that was funny as hell, the captain's response, and he's like, yeah, and he knows you.
Yeah. Which tells us that, you know, Stemmons is smart, and he's arrogant because he knows he's smart. But, you know, it's one of those things where you really get a feel for how smart she is this episode, because she's analyzing Stemmons' words. Like you said, when she hears a word she's not familiar with, she kind of breaks it down by prefix, the suffix, and the core, or whatever. I'm not an English major. I don't know all the sections of a word.
I don't either, so
I got a more useful degree than English literature. God, that's, can't believe I went there, but I did. Hold on, I gotta wipe the tears away from laughing so I could read my notes.
Are you done now? You good?
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Okay. There was something I wanted, because you brought up the whole why was he being transported 6 months later thing. So at the end of the episode, when Lorca asks Brenham to join his crew, she figures out that, you know, she had her transferred prisons without notice, which is unusual for a prisoner. They usually get notice that they're being transferred to another prison. She didn't get that luxury. And then she mentions that she was en route and then had to deviate from their course unexpectedly just so Discovery could come to the rescue. So Lorca kind of orchestrated her whole, I won't say breakout, but her being used on the Discovery.
So does that mean that he killed one of his, or a Starfleet officer, just to get him on that ship?
What do you mean?
Well, if you remember, when the creatures got on the ship, the pilot went out to, you know, get him off, and the tether broke. So she got kind of...
Yeah, I want to say because Discovery comes to the rescue right after that, I'm pretty sure that they rescue the pilot. Given
know,
that it didn't, I mean, we don't know for sure.
Well, I thought they were at warp. That's why.
I don't.
Which know. Would be weird, but it looked like in the background it would be.
Oh, I thought they had to drop out of warp because they went through this storm and then the bugs were eating up their electrical system. So I thought they had to drop out. I don't know. I don't know the details. It's very minor, but I was thinking, you know, the tether broke, but she was wearing a.
Because, yeah, she had the suit, but I mean, if. Like, she did end up dying just to get him on there. That's a big freaking deal.
Could have been. So, is there anything else you want to talk about? We did hear something about a black badge, which...
Well, it depends on how in-depth you want to get into that.
Not very, given how it wasn't mentioned much in this episode. It will be mentioned later in the season. I mean,
as soon as they said...
This season came out 3 years ago, so...
Well, as soon as they said the black badge and you saw the uniform that they were wearing, I knew exactly who it was supposed to be. Like, I didn't even need the gesture, but that's just me personally. So if you guys
when you watched this episode for the very first time and you were first introduced to the black badge, you knew exactly what it was.
Well, I couldn't guarantee it, but I had an extremely strong hunch that proved to be right. But I didn't know. There was no hard, confirmed, like, guaranteed this was it. you know, it wasn't like a Klingon logo on the suit that she was wearing to confirm. Yeah. Yeah, to know that that was Klingon, but I was 99.9% sure that was a Klingon ship before, you know, even though you knew that from the Klingons earlier, but, you know, I didn't know for certain, but I was fairly confident, and I turned out to be right.
Okay.
And the reason that is because you actually see it a lot in Star Trek, and not from Next Generation or the OG series, but you see it a fair amount in Deep Space Nine.
You see the black badge?
Well, the reason or the explanation behind the black badge, you see it in Deep Space Nine, in Enterprise, and in the movies, the remake movies.
Yeah, it is in Into Darkness, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I forgot about that. Okay. So, okay, here's how we'll end up in this episode. So, given the first three episodes of Discovery, we've seen them the first time 3 years ago. We're rewatching them now for our podcast. From a hardcore Star Trek fan's point of view, what do you think of these first three episodes in setting up this new series for Star Trek Discovery?
Well, I don't know. I like the CGI. I like the graphics. I like the way it looks. It looks really good. It looks like they put a lot of time and effort into it. But right now, there is a lot of inconsistencies with past, you know, Star Trek timelines and storylines. And I mean, there's a lot that just doesn't make sense. And it almost seems like a storytelling, or it's not that it seems like it. It is. They're telling a story of Michael Burnham. I almost did it again.
Birmingham.
I almost did it again.
She from Alabama.
I guess so. You know, they're telling her story rather doing episodic storytelling and development of an entire crew.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it should almost be called Star Trek Burnham.
Yeah. They really don't. It's a different direction than what Star Trek has previously done. And that's why I do not consider it to be a Star Trek
show. You fear change.
Well, no, it's not that I fear change. It's that Star Trek has done something really well over five different TV series and kept a consistent consistent would be the best word. A consistent storyline that makes sense throughout its timeline. They have interconnecting stories throughout its over a period of time that sticks through each of the shows. And this kind of broke it. You know, they don't have, it's not crew based. It's a storytelling. It's a lot of differences from the original five TV series. So I do not consider it to be one of a Star Trek TV series. I consider it to be something separate from the original five series. So that's just me personally.
Okay.
I mean, there was a reason why this is the first time I've rewatched Discovery since each of them came out.
Aired 3 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, I might have been a little harsh on my initial reaction to it because rewatching it, it looks a little bit better. I've noticed a little bit more than I did the first go around, but it's still. These first three episodes were still relatively disappointing as a Star Trek fan. But
so, from the casual fan's perspective, aka me,
mm-hmm.
I was intrigued, or still am intrigued, and I think the first three episodes do a decent job at setting up the story to come,
mm-hmm.
because it has you curious on, first of all, this Klingon war. Second of all, this new propulsion technology. And then, you know, at the end of it, you find out Lorca captures the beast that was attacking the away team on the USS Glenn. So you're very curious on how the season could turn out and the episodes could turn out following these first three. So,
yeah, I mean
I didn't love them rewatching them. I didn't love them when I first watched them, but I was intrigued enough to come back every week and give it a shot.
Yeah, see how it goes. I mean, it's got some interesting plot twists that I wasn't expecting. And they do, and I do remember that they try to take it in directions that Star Trek fans, or at least that they thought that Star Trek fans would enjoy. It just, the way that I remember it, it did not, it was clear what their objectives were, but it was also clear that they did not succeed in those objectives, if that makes any sense. You know what I mean? I guess.
Yeah. But it was one of those, I mean, I haven't seen all the other shows, but I've seen all of Next Generation, half of Deep Space, all of Enterprise, most of the original series. So
yeah,
I'm pretty familiar with Trek. And
I think you're just missing Voyager.
Yeah, I've only seen a handful of those episodes. But, you know, Discovery, it's one of those, you know, I'm intrigued.
Yeah. There was one, I know.
That's how I feel about the first three episodes. They could have gotten off to a better start, but then they didn't, at least they didn't stumble right out of the gate, and it was just awful.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. There was definitely room for improvement.
Yeah. It was one of the, I couldn't follow why she would go into mutiny. Well, I could, but I couldn't.
Technically, and that's another thing that, according to Star Trek history, based off of the, Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, there has never actually been a mutiny in Star Trek history, or successful mutiny. Or no, there has never been anybody tried for mutiny in the history of the Federation. But this kind of messes that up. You know, that was, you know, nobody's ever been tried for mutiny in the history of Star Trek. Oh, well, we'll. Screw that. We'll just make our whole storyline a premise about, you know, this chick who got tried for mutiny.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. It's one of those. I don't know. I guess I'm finding myself a little lost on words because I thought I could come up with something, but
it almost
feels odd.
It almost feels like the Solo of the Star Trek universe.
No, because I actually like Solo.
Well, no, Solo was a storyline you didn't really need. But one that kind of answers some questions, you know, they talk a lot about, or the Federation talks about the Klingon War as an example of first contacts going wrong. And they use that as a reference a lot in Next Generation, Voyager, Deep Space Nine, because it really didn't go well. And
we see why.
Yeah. So I think Discovery is essentially one, they're trying to explain that. And then they're trying to, you know, create interesting twists while, you know, giving us some unnecessary information we really didn't need. You know, we really didn't need an origin story on Han Solo, but we kind of got one. We didn't really need a explanation on the Klingon War, but we kind of got one.
Yeah, we didn't really need a Christopher Tangent, but we still got one.
You're going to get one regardless.
Yeah, that's how Hollywood is with their shows.
Yeah. At least we're consistent.
Yep. Well, I don't have anything else to discuss on these first three episodes, do you?
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, I could go on forever. You're talking to the wrong guy. I mean, this isn't a tangent. Could, but you know, I mean,
we like
that's
to keep our shows less than how much you rant.
Yeah, that's fair. No, I mean, that's pretty much all I got.
Should we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat him.
Punch it!
Punch it!
Punch it!
Punch it!
Let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
All right, well, what do we have to look forward to next week then, brother?
So, next time on Deep Space High, we will be going over Star Trek Discovery Season 1, Part 2, which will be episodes 4, 5, and 6. Which, if anyone's curious, that is entitled The Butcher's Knife Cares Not for the Lamb's Cry. God, that's a long name. Choose Your Pain and Leith, Leth, Leith, Letteth. I don't know. L-E-T-H-E. However that sounds.
L-E-T-H-E. E. Leith?
I don't know. I said Leith. I said Leth. I said Letith. I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't think it's Letith. That makes no sense.
Letith in this episode.
Yes. Let us move on.
Let it be. Let it be.
Okay. Senora, not a singer. No. All right. Well, I guess that'll do it for this episode of Deep Space High. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Join us next time as we continue the discussion on Star Trek Discovery.
Yes, and don't forget to keep the conversation going with hashtag Deep Space High. And don't forget to check out our Facebook page at Deep Space High TV Reviews. And check out our Instagram at Deep Space High Podcast to stay up to date on our latest announcements.
And hashtag Tacos and Trek. Don't forget about that. It's back.
Hell yeah.
It's back, baby. Everyone's favorite hashtag not to use. So we also want everyone to leave a review. Give us a nice 5-star review or rating on an Apple Podcast. That'll help boost us in the charts. It'll get other people to discover our show, get more listeners, and it could potentially give us feedback that we will ignore when we make our shows. So why don't you go ahead and do that? I'm Jedi Master Steve.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris. Live long and prosper.